Hi, and thank you for joining us today for Destigmatizing Urology, an official podcast series from Urology Times. As we all know, stereotypes and misleading information circulate within the field of urology, and these miscommunications can negatively affect doctor-patient counseling and decision-making. This series destigmatizes topics in urology alongside clinical experts to help listeners practice more efficiently and foster better relationships with their patients. I'm your host and Urology Times assistant editor, Janelle Hart. Today I'm speaking with Dr. J. Quentin Clemens. He discusses the common misconceptions associated with interstitial cystitis, specifically from the mindset of the patient. Furthermore, he gives an overview of the MAP study, which has helped to destigmatize the condition in major ways. Clemens is an Edward J. McGuire Professor of Urology, an Associate Chair for Research, and Fellowship Director of Female Pelvic Medicine and Reconstructive Surgery at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. What are the stigmas surrounding interstitial cystitis?
Well, I guess one of the things I'd like to start with is, you know, I think as the physicians, we help to take care of these patients with interstitial cystitis and other conditions, but they're the ones who are kind of living it. And, you know, in some way, I feel like the best people to ask would be the patients, because we see one aspect, which is what they choose to tell us and to focus on in the clinic. So I certainly have experience with it, but, you know, I would always want to keep in mind the patient viewpoint here, because especially for a question about being stigmatized, well, they're the ones who have to live it every day. Certainly, I think that for many urologic conditions, you know, sometimes I jokingly tell the patients these are more common than you think. It's because people tend to not bring them up at cocktail parties. And there are some conditions where they don't have that. And so I think people sometimes more than others can feel like they're all alone or they have something that's uncommon and it may not be. So I think there's that kind of the privacy aspect of your bladder or the pelvic organs in general that can be embarrassing to talk about or uncomfortable more so than some other things. So that's one aspect of it. I think that certainly from a caregiver standpoint, there has traditionally been this feeling that patients with IC to some degree have a psychiatric condition where they tend to be more, I don't know what the term would be, histrionic, or where it's almost as though it's more of a psychiatric disorder than a quote real medical disorder. And I think we've moved past that. There's plenty of research now for IC and other pain conditions that there are objective changes in the body that we can measure that I think help move it away from that type of syndrome to maybe more of a medical condition. But so that's the other where I think there, you know, maybe some patients or certainly some clinicians who might be reluctant to assign a diagnosis of IC because of all the maybe potential baggage that sometimes can carry with it and not wanting to, I don't know what the word would be, inconvenience the patient or somehow assign them that category and feel like it maybe would either have other clinicians kind of view them differently or I suppose the patient, you know, what I always tell patients sometimes, I think you have some features of, and that means they're going to then look that up online. And I always say, well, you know, I think you're going to find that a lot of the symptoms you have are going to resonate with, okay, that sounds like along the lines I have, but it doesn't mean you're going to end up always as bad off as some of the people you might read about online. I say sometimes that the folks who are doing well don't maybe spend as much time posting online as people who are struggling with it. So those are some initial thoughts.
So how do these stigmas impact the management of patients with this condition?
Certainly, as I've said, sometimes if a clinician has a certain preconceived notion, or you call it a stigma about the condition, then that may influence how legitimately, I suppose, they take the patient's symptoms and approach them. You know, I think, as I also said, I mean, sometimes there may be a reluctance to assign a diagnosis because of stigma that's associated with it. I've heard of that too. Conversely, I think that's in my opinion, a minor consideration, but for many people actually being assigned a diagnosis and say, okay, well, now I'm not in medical purgatory anymore in the sense of no one being able to tell me what I have, why I have these symptoms. And at least now we can focus on, okay, this is a diagnosis that medical people know about. So maybe doesn't directly answer your question, but, you know, that last comment, but the others I think are pertinent.
And so what are some innovations in this space that have helped to manage the quality of life for patients who suffer from this condition?
Well, I think this is where some of the MAP study findings are pertinent. So I've been involved in the MAP study for over 10 years. It stands for the Multidisciplinary Approach to the Study of Chronic Pelvic Pain, and it focuses on IC and chronic prostatitis. It's a large study funded by the NIH. And what we've done is we've partnered with experts outside of urology who have studied other chronic pain conditions for years and have learned things that have helped with the treatment. And so we have applied some of those principles and studied those in patients with IC and prostatitis. And you know, the concepts of identifying neuroimaging signatures, patients with IC, especially those who have widespread pain, and that those are similar to other types of pain conditions, and some objective findings of quantitative sensory testing. The idea is that there are some individuals who seem to just be hypersensitive to stimuli, whether painful stimuli or normal stimuli. And this is all pointing in that direction that of more of a disease model than a syndrome model, I guess. So how does that help? Well, I mean, it helps to underscore that many of our patients do have widespread pain. So they not only have pain in the bladder or pelvis, but pain in other parts of their body. And those patients maybe would benefit from treatments that can address more widespread pain. In other words, rather than necessarily just focusing on the bladder and specific treatments there. I think it also reinforces, and there are many studies that have shown this, even if you very much improve their bladder symptoms, they still would have a poor quality of life because of the pain they have elsewhere. And at least being aware of that as a urologist, not that we can necessarily help treat their neck pain or wherever else it may be, but at least query, do you have someone helping you with that? You seem to have a lot of pain in different places. And if not, then maybe start some efforts to get them that help they need, because it's only with treating the entire patient that you really improve their quality of life. So I'd say that's been a major theme that has emerged with data over the last really even 5 years that will change the field in some ways.
So what would you say is the urologist's role in destigmatizing interstitial cystitis?
I take one step back. The role of the research that we're doing is to really continue to work to identify a more effective treatment approach. I think one of the things that is very frustrating for physicians in general is when we confronted with a problem that we don't really have effective tools to help manage. And it's just human nature, I think, that then isn't necessarily a condition that you would relish seeing. We want to help people, and especially surgical subspecialty where we can have the mindset that we have a problem that we can fix. And so we're working on that. I think that urologists certainly are the specialists that interstitial cystitis patients find their way to. I think we all have a responsibility to be aware of the condition and be willing to see it and treat it and to stay up to date on new developments. So I think that's one thing, you know, I'd say putting the effort into understanding and perhaps not treat the patients the same way that they were treated. I say treated, you know, in terms of the medications and medical approach that they were 20 years ago. I think we've moved past that. So staying up to date, because I think where the data are emerging is that the more you are aware of that, the less stigmatized the patients will be. Probably as a researcher, I guess that put my answer kind of more in a research focused area, I suppose.
And lastly, Dr. Clemens, is there anything else you feel our audience should know about this specific topic?
A couple things in terms of the contemporary treatment, I would say. You know, the first is that we should really be aggressive looking for Hunter lesions. I think in the past, this was this concept that cystoscopy could eventually be done at some point. I think that now it's changed a bit, where if you have someone who you think has interstitial cystitis, you probably should do a cystoscopy early on, because if you do find a Hunter lesion, then you can treat that and the patients do pretty consistently get better. Now, when I say get better, they improve. We continue to need to work at it. So that's one main point. The other one would be that think we've moved away to some degree from the idea of, you know, first line, second line. Of course, we want to, all things equal, treat patients with the least aggressive or at least risky treatments. But not all patients benefit from trying a medication first, for instance. And so I think individualizing a little more and not feeling like you are breaking the rules if you move to a more aggressive treatment, whether it's a bladder instillation, maybe a hydrodistension, maybe other treatments, even some, whether it's Botox or nerve stimulation procedures in some patients. And the point is, I think being willing to individualize it considerably and not necessarily feel like you start with first line always and then, you know, quote first line. I think we're moving away from that terminology. So those would be some additional points other than the, what I already made about, you know, widespread pain being, I think, an important characteristic to look for.
Be sure to subscribe to Destigmatizing Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest clinical perspectives and practice management advice by visiting www.urologytimes.com. Thank you for listening.